Hi, this is Bobby Ray, Soul of the Sound. New Jersey and all around is the town. Podcast really lays it down. If you move your finger and twist that dial, we will cut your fingers off.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Well, hello, everybody. Hello. We're back. We're back in the swing of things. It's me, Scott, and there's Mike down there in Georgia. And welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans, episode 257. I actually know the number. I actually think we're on time today. I don't think we have any backlogged episodes. No one's going on vacation. We are back and ready to go. Mike, how are you?
We're doing well, Scotty. We actually gone 2 weeks in a row doing this show.
It's the most
incredible feat of 2019. Miracles can happen here on the Shenanigans Showdown.
I think it's Verbal Shenanigans, but you'll learn the name of the show.
That's
day.
Our nickname.
No, that was a bit we tried that didn't really, never really took off. My fault, but so everybody, welcome on to Verbal Shenanigans. If this is your first time, we are a weekly podcast. Most of the time, Mondays, every single week, we come out with a new episode. Last week, we had Ryan Weimer from a great organization called Magic Wheelchair. Go check it out. It was a good episode. Last week was like our first time like back on normal schedule, so we did a lot of fun discussion and whatnot, but go check out that organization. Go check out our back catalog. But welcome to the show. Every week we kind of, I don't know, we kind of talk about life and talk about experiences, and then sometimes we talk about whatever pops up. We play some games, and we always have a interesting guest. And tonight is absolutely no different. So,
nope.
Mike, how's it going? I know you probably got in the door not too long ago.
I literally came into the door about 2 hours ago. Earlier this morning, I was up in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, finishing up a nice 4-day weekend to celebrate the 1-year anniversary with the Mrs. Miss Isabel Berlew.
Wow, 11 months longer than we all predicted. Congrats, buddy.
Yeah, I told you, bet the over. I was going for it. Mafia put a gun to my head, and they're like, you got to go 1 year. I'm like, all right, I'll fix it.
You know, Berlew, as you celebrate your 1 year, if you really think about the connections and the weirdness and how life works, it's really because of this show that you were able to meet your lovely wife.
That is true. It was through your lovely wife that set up me with my lovely wife.
Yep.
That made this all come about and everything. So, thank the missus and for my missus, I guess, would be the answer.
But yeah, so, all right, let's break this down. Last week you told me you were going away. You said, I'm going away to Tennessee to the Smoky Mountains. Okay.
Correct.
You did not provide much other detail about this.
Yeah, I'd save the surprise for the following week. I didn't want to give too much leeway, but I knew the second it came out, it'd be like, uh-oh, Scott's ready.
So, the first post, I'm like, oh, they're going to the Smoky Mountain. I'm thinking like, I don't know, maybe like hometown cooking and maybe some hiking and some things like that. But the first post that comes out, bam, Christmas.
Yeah. So here's the backstory of trip.
Yeah, people who haven't listened, give them the crash course.
Yeah, so if you're just tuning in, this conversation me and Scott have every year. When I was growing up.
Usually twice a year.
When I was growing up, my mother was beyond obsessed with Christmas music. I mean, to a crazy level. If you grew up in the 90s, you might remember those stereo systems that were two big woofers, Like, literally, the whole system would be five pieces. They were all 6 feet tall. It was the state of the art because you could play cassettes and records and CDs. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it just the Vaughn would be to a level that no human being should have to deal with. But, you know, because it's all crazy music, people love it, whatever. So my mom was so in love with Christmas music, she would start the second the last trick-or-treater left our porch until 1 week into the new year. And she would play this music from the moment she woke up until probably about at the 8, 9, 10 o'clock time frame. Anywhere that just basically the entire day.
Yeah.
And this woman had literally every single Christmas album to ever exist. There is nothing that was out of bounds that she did not have. If you were in the subway humming Silent Night, somehow my mom had a cassette of you and played it 10 times a day. That's how obsessed as she was.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Christmas music was kind of my trigger for the longest time. I was never anti the holiday.
Right.
But any kind of situation where I walk in and it was that uber cheery Christmas music, it would just hit a nerve and I would just be miserable. And I would have to leave the room immediately.
Now, is there a particular song after all those years and time that, like, is there one that sticks out more than any that really gets on your skin? Or is it just
the collector? I think the Celine Dion Christmas CD, that that was up there. Because that was when she got really big at the beginning, and my mom loved it, and literally a week's worth of 14 hours a day of Celine.
Okay.
So
now here's the plot twist for everybody.
Yeah, so fast forward to 3 years ago where, as we talked about, I was introduced to my future wife, Isabel. She is probably just as obsessed with Christmas as my mom. She may be equal or over obsessed with Christmas music herself. So there was a very kind of rough beginning as I was falling in love with her and then coming to the realization that, oh my God, this is a hurdle we got right here.
So, you know, like that old Oedipus syndrome where, like, apparently we were like marry our mothers. So maybe it's completely true.
I wouldn't put it past her. I wouldn't put it past her there, Scotty boy. I mean, and we had like actual stories. I can recall a time in particular to show how much I love my wife and try to explain how much I have a thing for Christmas music. Thanksgiving, we came back from a friend's down in South River, and we're on the Garden State Parkway. And we're coming across our exit, going over the bridge. Some cars in front did a hot stop. I see him in front of it. I do a hot stop. Unfortunately, the person behind me did not. So they smack into my wife's car. This really triggered her a lot because she had a previous bad car accident before this. So a lot of things are going into her head. We had to wait like an hour and a half for a cop to finally show up to get through the paperwork. And everything is going through. On top of it, I was trying to rush home because I'm a big Redskins fan. And that was the one year when the Redskins were good. They were playing the Giants on Thanksgiving night.
Okay.
So to show how much love I have for my wife is I had the game on Sirius trying to listen. I could see how much hurt she was. I just literally went and then turned Sirius over to channel one, which was the 24-hour Christmas carol.
Wow.
And I could see a smile on her face. And after 30 minutes of driving as I'm doing this for her, calming her down. She literally turned to me and she said, "You must really love me in order to attempt this." And I said, "You have no idea what's going through my head right now." So
now those listening, let me give a little bit. Mike is a very giving guy. Mike is he'll put himself through pain, you know, for the ones he likes, or something like we talked about, even last week, like the radio show we were on. I know many times, you were not happy, as was I. And we kind of suffered through things. We kind of get through it. So Mike has that kind of personality sometimes where he will put himself aside, for the good of what's going on, I guess, which is why he's stuck with me for 5 years here, basically.
Yeah. So, I got the toughest lip in the world because I have to bite it more than anybody else on this planet. but we
all put up with you, so that's also
that is true, and I thank you all for that. So we initially had plans to kind of look at late August kind of vacation / celebration. So the talk was always Nashville, Tennessee. Never been there before. Yep,
I hear good things.
I always heard great things about the city and whatever. There was some talk about my parents coming with us, but that kind of fell through as they moved into a new house a week ago, and my sister is down at the moment. But in any case, as we're talking and trying to figure out the anniversary, my wife told me, and as she's looking through things, she's like, "Oh, there's a resort where it's Christmas 365 days a year." And I'm a little tightening up here. I'm like, "Oh, that's really interesting." And all she's like, it's like 3.5 hours away from Nashville. Sure if we want to kind of do that. And I'm going, and I'm like, "All right, so where is this resort?" And she says, "Pigeon Forge."
Hell.
And that, and that actually, in all honesty, it actually excited me because another little thing to me, I'm a big amusement park roller coaster kind of guy. And I said, "Oh my God, that's where Dollywood's at." So that would actually be the compromise. Now, granted, she loves amusement parks too, but at least I could sit back and say, "All right, there's something to put my hat on for this anniversary to go through this."
Now, is Dollywood, I've only heard the name, you know, whatever, briefly. Yeah. I think of Dolly Parton. But is Dollywood like a updated, like, modern park, or is it something that's like kind of set back in time?
Their update, that was the third day I was going to get to it, but I will say this, as a guy who has been a huge Six Flags person for a long time, I put Dollywood above them. Wow. And I'm talking about both New Jersey and Georgia.
Are there any coasters where you could ride like in one of her implants around?
No. Oh. Well, first off, she's natural. God bless her. She's like mid-70s, still got those double D's flying out there. But
that'd be a great coaster. If like each of you was kind of in one, each of you is like in one boom, so like your where you're in is kind of like it moves a little bit, it has some give, and like that's kind of the fun of it. You kind of rock around like a breast.
Yeah. But yeah. But they put, I know they invested more money recently. It's kind of like a kiddie park they added into it, but the park is clean. The coasters are really good. One of the best wooden roller coasters I've ever rid on was there, called Lightning Rod, where it literally, you know how with most wooden roller coasters, you come to the hill and you got to wait for like a minute as it pulls you up and starts a ride?
Yes.
Like unexpectedly, like you just take the first corner after leaving and you're just doing 60 up a hill. It's just Like, it was so unexpected. It was like you're laughing the entire time where you're like, you can't believe how fast this thing is. But yeah, that is definitely like one of the better parks. We ended up going there Sunday, absolutely zero lines. I think I had a lot to do with the fact that we went the week before Labor Day, as well as the fact that there was chances of thunderstorms. But if you can get into the area and you're a amusement park fan, 100% recommended. We're actually thinking about getting season passes there in November. That's right. How good it is over there.
So back
let
to
me kind of
Christmas hell.
Break down.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's break down certain. Let me start off with the city itself, Pigeon Forge. And very beautiful. You can
sounds like a town out of like Game of Thrones or something. I live in Pigeon Forge.
I would describe Pigeon Forge as a nice laid back area, but you could tell everybody in that city has some kind of money game into this. And by the fact that it's kind of like, you know how if you go to certain boardwalks, there'll be like Jenkinson's Aquarium where it's like, it's the greatest aquarium in the state, where anybody who's in the state is like, no, it's not.
Yes.
Like literally there's like 800 things of that.
Right.
Where it's like some like place that sells t-shirts. We got live alligators in here, and for what I see in the videos, it's like a 3-inch little crocodile in like a fishbowl aquarium kind of deal.
Yes.
And apparently two people basically own this city, which is Dolly Parton and Paula Deen. Paula Deen's got a lot of money in there, where I sit back and say, with that whole thing with that racist wedding thing went on, they were probably the one city to be like, no, it's cool. We don't want to pack up. It's cool.
Is everything you eat just like soaked in butter down there? And racism?
There was like one kid we thought, we're eating breakfast one day and like two little kids, probably like 8 and 6, were walking, and the one kid's like, you shut up. And then the other kid's like, you shut up. You're a Mexican. It didn't even make sense, but it was like,
you know, they heard it from their father.
It's one of those things that you're like, oh, well, these poor kids. At the same time, you have to laugh your rear end off because you didn't expect to hear that on a day.
Yeah. They definitely like hear it in the house all day long. So they're just repeating what they hear.
Yeah. We'll get into the Christmas Inn. I guess I'll start off by saying, I guess the proper term might be, I think I have Stockholm syndrome, Scott, because this place didn't bother me.
Really?
I think I'm getting to the point where I am just so inclined to say the rest of my life I will hear Christmas music, even though the holiday is 7 months away.
Now, let me ask you something right away. Like, does being exposed to this Christmas stuff and your wife lengthening the Christmas season kind of spoil the actual Christmas?
It never did, because like I always said, even though I despise Christmas music, I would say I still always look forward to the holiday and being with family and stuff like that.
Okay.
What
is the clientele?
It can grow on you to the point where it wears you down a little bit, but I don't think it's to the point where you're like, I freaking hate Christmas or anything like that.
What is the clientele at the Christmas Lodge? Is it generally older people or people with kids? I feel like I can go either way.
Both.
Okay.
Both. We were easily the median. We were right in the middle when it came to ages. And all, they were people 20 years older and 20 years younger. What I'm going to tell you is I liked it. I'll give them credit. Everything, they have a ton of, I mean, literally the whole place is decorated up with Christmas stuff. They talked about how they, every like 6 months or so, they change up stuff around just so the next time people come around, it's a new experience for them. They were never in your face over the top. It was not like I go into my room and Christmas music is blasting.
Right.
It wasn't 11 o'clock you know, get a knock on the door. Ho, ho, ho. Keep it down, kids. I'm coming to deliver presents. It was.
That would be kind of awesome.
Everybody there was very nice.
Right.
The guys who played Santa were very professional, and they were very welcoming and talkative. Staff was wonderful. The breakfast was excellent.
It better be.
Yeah, the scene was great. I mean, the rooms were decorated up. I can literally say, as much as I cringe going into it, I had no objections to the stay there.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, I'm insanely shocked by that.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack here. Mm-hmm. So let's now it's Christmas every day. Is everybody just overly jolly at all times?
I would say the clientele that were there were pretty cheerful. I can't think of a scenario I came across somebody who's grumpy there. I mean, obviously the staff's got to be cheerful. I mean, I got to figure they have one bad day, they're out of there. I mean, you can't have to start the a-hole bellhop from the Christmas hotel. You know what I mean?
Okay. Are there presents being distributed?
There's no presents being distributed.
What?
But I'll go through the list. Every night, they have fresh baked cookies.
Oh.
Everybody gets two cookies every night. Literally every part of the inn has some kind of Christmas in there. Like, you go into the exercise room and it's Snoopy Christmas in there. You go to the pool and the windows are lined with Nutcracker soldiers. I think outside the public bathroom, everything has Christmas stuff. That's why we did a scavenger hunt there, and we actually got to run through the entire inn just so we can win the Christmas kaleidoscopes that they give out. Even though they don't even check. We took pictures of the items we're supposed to find, and Izzy went up. She's like, I found them. We had pictures. Here you go.
Why do I feel like it's like you like shoving children out of the way to get to your clues?
There was none of that. We actually tried to help some families, and like the kids got mad, like, no clues. I got to find it. So maybe those were the closest to the non-cheerful.
So no one thought like, oh man, like there's something going on with these two. Like, we should stay away from them. They're pretty intense about the scavenger hunt.
No, I don't think so. I go into the room, I see the Snoopy, we take a picture, then I break it so nobody else can win the prize. Victory is ours. Merry Christmas.
So do you, when you, how long does it take you to just be like, oh, like take a breath and like buy in, like, okay, I'm stuck in Christmas land for a couple days?
It really didn't take that long because, like I said, people there were super nice. It wasn't a shove down your throat kind of thing. Like, they weren't in character or anything like that. They do have a guy. They have a regular Santa. And on Saturday night, we actually got the backup Santa. I guess the Santa was off that night. But Santa is there with Mrs. Claus to take pictures either in the morning or in the evening. Mm. And on Saturday night, they have like a big gathering in the big, I guess, mess hall or whatever you want to call it, where like the kids get to be close by and they sing Christmas carols and items like that. So it's a very nice setup. There was actually a very peaceful moment when we left. This older gentleman came up, and I guess he goes there a lot because, like I said, the regular Santa was there, and the regular Santa's like, oh, Bob, it's great to see you. And on, like, the guy was saying, yeah, I wasn't sure we were going to make it this year and all with, I mean, he was alluding to, he was like fairly sick, and they were actually having like a small conversation, quiet one. He was whispering something in his ear, and it was kind of a sweet thing where it's like it was his thing to stay there, and they know the people. And
so it was a Christmas miracle.
I guess you could say that. I guess you can.
All right. All right. Well, I took it upon myself to so your wife is both obsessed with you. So now you have two obsessions you have to fight. Okay. You have to fight this Disney obsession and Christmas obsession.
I'm going to add to this list while we're before you do whatever you're about to do.
Okay.
One you kind of already know is with picture taking, but right. To another level, she uberly loves the old timey photos.
Oh, like the ones where you could like whatever, pay whatever, and they put you in a hat and like a gun.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when we were in Gatlinburg, that's right by the Smoky Mountains. That was really cool because you actually get to take like ski lifts up, and they have the world's largest suspension bridge in the Smokies, where you're literally on a wooden bridge and getting to see the whole view and everything. Nice. But
see that I'm into. But I'm into.
Yeah, you would really like that. And sometimes they see black bears there. That's where I think you would really love
bears.
Like
bears and sketchy bridges. I'm in.
Yeah. But there you go. As we were like walking through and doing things, she overly insists that we have to do an old time photo thing. And it's one of those. I'm not going to put it as I hate it, but just one of those. It's not my things, but we had a fun little shoots. You can get on Facebook. If you want to share with the audience, you can do those. So I was dressed up as a cowboy and she was dressed up as one of those saloon girls. And I look like the mean cowboy. And then the final picture is her holding a gun to me as I'm holding like a bag of money, basically taking my money.
If only it ended the way we all want that photo to end, you know?
No. I kept going. Had to live because I had to go see Cooters, which is the Dukes of Hazzard Museum in Gatlinburg. But I will say, sadly, somewhat disappointed in it.
Aww.
And the reason, because they're preparing to move to Pigeon Forge, so it looked like a ton of stuff was basically they were ready to get rid of and all. It was just very quiet.
So far we got Christmas photos, Cooters,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Old timey pictures. And what and else?
The fourth one is wax museums.
Really? She,
if there's a wax museum, we go.
And why is that? What's the love of wax museums?
I think she just loves the play of it. I mean, number one, she loves taking photos, so she loves like those cute little things there, again, to sit next to them. Two, they have props there, so you can kind of dress up for the situation. And also, like, when you're going to see like James Bond, will be like a gun and maybe like a shirt where it looks like you're wearing a tuxedo and stuff like that. Like she absolutely loves wax museums and all. So that was part of day three down in Tennessee.
Now, I seem to remember mm-hmm. last time we talked about your vacation, you said the next vacation, no matter what, is going to be like sightseeing of some sort or something. No Disney, no Christmas, I think your words were.
If I did, I got to bite my tongue on that one.
Was there any Disney involved?
There was no Disney involved. Well, I mean, circling back, the anniversary gift for her is tickets to Disney on Ice. Scott, did we lose a connection?
There's a connection problem, guys. I just can't seem to get in touch with Burlew. Hold on.
Scott,
ever
I
again. I can't seem to get in touch with Burlew ever again. It's weird. Now, I cannot wait to go to Disney and Ice, and it's you and 5,000 five-year-olds.
Yeah. add to it, I kind of screwed up. I was getting the night time tickets, the 6 p.m. tickets, and I got the 11 a.m. and on San Francisco. Oh my God.
You guys better like kidnap a kid or like borrow your nephew or whatever and just. You need to figure that one out. That's going to be interesting. Yeah. I can't wait till all the kids have like their little glowy things and like hands. And then there's you and Izzy with glowy things and hands. And you with the gun from the old time photo, just in the pocket of your jeans. You know, maybe by halfway through that, ready to die. I remember my ex, she was very into gymnastics growing up, and even into college, that's what she was going to do, whatever. So I remember when we first started dating, I bought her these. I actually got them for free from like someone on Craigslist or eBay. I can't remember which one of them. It was like a gymnastics show. It was right after the Olympics had happened, so it was all the gymnasts from like the Olympics, but they were in some kind of show. So I went and I got him. I'm like, oh, she'll like this. Follow up. We go, and it is like teeny bopper central. So much so that I just feel strange being there. It's like miserable.
Is it like those Dancing with the Stars? Not the current one, but the ones from like the 80s where it's like a special and all. Uh-oh, Olivia Newton-John is out there doing the 70s bop.
It was more like, okay, here comes, I don't know, I can't think of a gymnast right now. Here comes gymnast, and she's going to do some, and she goes on like a bouncy trampoline and does a couple flips, and then behind her is some boy band, like, baby, I love you, no. Like, and like some Disney, like, boy band playing, and then, like, they'd segue to the host. The host would be coming up, be like, what you guys think of blah, 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 and everybody like, yeah! And they're like, really killed it, huh? And like this really scripted, like over the top. Talk. And like, oh my God, I'm like, I gotta go. So she watching because she's like, oh, I want to do it. I have to. This was in Continental Airlines Arena, which is no longer even there. I was like, I gotta go find a beer or something. So I go in the hallway. All I see is dudes, just like dads and other dudes. Problem was, nobody was there. So all the beer stands were shut down.
Oh,
So,
and I got a feeling that'll be the same for me about 11 a.m. So,
yeah, not if you flask it, not if you
put in some binoculars or something like that.
Wow. She'd just be like, hey, babe, don't you have like a friend that really likes Disney? I mean, these two tickets are for, you know, any two people. I mean, I just feel like, so before we get to our guest, I went on Reddit to see if what you're going through is a common thing.
Okay.
So I found one story I thought would be interesting, and I want you to compare and contrast. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the title of Reddit is "My 28-year-old fiance of 2 years is obsessed with Christmas, and it's starting to get to me. Help." Okay.
Okay.
"My fiancée Phoebe has been obsessed with Christmas ever since she was a child. I only know this because she both told and showed me. It was very strange to see all the pictures over the years of how gung-ho she is about it. In the past year, as she realized she's an adult and she could do whatever she wants, I know, weird timing since she's 26, but sometimes 26 feels more like 22. Anyway, since she's realized she can do anything she wants, she started the whole thing where every month is Christmas. We had to buy, oh, hold on, phone's loading. Okay. We've had a tree up every month. She puts it up around the 15th, then takes it down a day or two after the 25th. She doesn't go out and buy all new decorations or anything, but she does switch up the looks. And she puts presents under the tree too. Sometimes they're expensive. Other times there's something we need or in the pantry or whatever. It's starting to get to me. Every morning on the 25th, she has to act like it's Christmas. We have to sit down, open presents, have a Christmas lunch, etc. She acts like it's really, truly Christmas. She complains when it's not wintry outside or snowy, saying how she wanted a white Christmas and all. I've asked her if we can tone it down, and she was a little quiet and obviously upset, but soldiered through it. Except come next month, all she did was scale back to a smaller tree and fewer presents. It's starting to get to the point where I don't want to have people over. I don't know how to handle or compromise this with her. She really loves Christmas. It's her favorite time of year, and she just wants it all the time. I think it reminds her of her childhood, but I don't know. I'm at my wit's end with this one and want suggestions on how to talk to her. What can I compromise with, etc.?
Well,
so pretend that was an advice column coming to Verbal Shenanigans. Dear Pearls.
Well, I will start off by saying I do know of people who have said that they keep their tree up year round. It's like a generic looking tree, not like it's full a tree. On like. Yeah, well, in other words, it's not like solely winter colors. I can think of where they basically say, yeah, it's kind of in the corner, doesn't have decorations all the time, but the tree is up year round.
Mm.
Izzy has heard this statement.
Oh,
I've turned to her and said, no, and kind of ended that. I've relayed, if you really wanted a tree up all year, you have your office upstairs to do the stuff in.
That's where you messed up. That's where you messed up.
No, because it would be her job to get the tree in there, the hassle and all that, and it wouldn't be in the living room for the full feel when it's Christmas time. So the offer's there, but that would mean less space for her Disney stuff. Ergo, the tree does not come out.
Here's the problem. You know what the combination is going to happen. She's going to find a Disney tree.
I mean, most of our decor on the tree is Disney related. So it's not like, oh, no, it's kind of like, yep, there it is.
It's only a matter of time before I think I even commented on this one of your stuff. You guys are going to be the Disney House of Georgia. It's going to be in those things to see. It's going to be like the Disney House of Georgia. See the happy wife and the really the really angry landlord.
See the husband go downstairs to his man cave.
He drinks a
lot.
Give
me $5 and go upstairs and leave me alone.
He drinks a lot.
Yeah, she's not that extreme where it's like the 25th. I'm sure if she listens to this episode, she would be like, babe, and I'll be like, no. I just imagine a guy going through a scenario and say, did you pick me up shaving cream? And she just picks up like something wrapped. I don't know. You'll have to wait a couple days to find out. yeah, that's next level. That's congratulations. You're a level above my mom and Izzy. That's something I think you got to get Dr. Phil or somebody on that one.
I think you will like one of the comments that someone made. I've seen people like this on various collector programs, and a lot of people apparently are very into things like this or Disney or whatever.
I will say, bumped into a decent amount of Disney people in that resort.
What is it?
Kind of combination. I guess it's the stay youthful, remember my childhood, adults can have fun kind of thinking about it. That's my thought process.
Maybe your next step is like Renaissance fairs. Maybe you guys are going to be like dressed up in like full night garb.
So you're proposing I'm going to be a Disney LARPer is what you're saying.
I'm sure there's I wonder if that's oh my god, I wonder if that's out there. Like I'm level two, Donald Duck. You can't talk to level one, Mickey. I'm Mr. Incredible. No, you're Mr. Pathetic. You know? All right, Berlou, it is guest time. No more Christmas. No more Christmas. But for some, this might be like Christmas morning.
There you go.
Those music heads out there. If you're into
it's our Christmas and Hanukkah present.
I mean, if you're into blues music, the next guy is pretty big, man. He's one of those guys who's been around for just so long in the music game. It's pretty remarkable. 86 years old, our next guest. And I'm very excited to talk to him. He's worked with the likes of James Brown and I mean, just every B.B. King, just every blues musician you can possibly think of, he's worked on. He even won a Grammy 2 years ago in 2017. So We're going to get Bobby Rush on the line. Bobby Rush on the line. I'm very excited to talk to him just for the wealth of experience he has. And, I mean, the guy seems like he's completely sharp and still touring. And I wish I was sharp and still touring. Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, we have, if we podcast for another 43 years, I can get up and match him. You know, you'll need a little extra time, you know.
43 more years.
Yeah.
Plus, I think we would have to match how long he's been playing music. So I think that's even longer.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd have to be in our 90s.
Hmm. I guess it's doable with our audience size and the grand revenue that we're getting from our sponsors.
Correct, correct.
Okay, guys, this is episode 4003. AJ Mattioli, how are you?
Scott? I forgot about the Duke Boys again. Tell me stories of the Duke Boys.
Mike, no one's heard of that show in 72 years.
I don't remember my brother's name, but I remember the Duke Boys at least. Tell me stories, Scott.
But I'm very excited to get the one and only Bobby Rush on the line. Let's give him a call. Bobby, first off, I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes on the show here. I had seen a bio about you and email that came through, and I thought you would be a perfect guest for the show, considering just how much experience you have and how much you've brought to the music world. So thank you for giving us a few minutes here.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'll be glad to do it, always.
So, Bobby, like, let me ask you something, like, you've been in the music business now for decades upon decades and decades.
66 years, man.
66 years. Where did that all get started for you? Were you a kid who picked
1951 in Chicago.
Okay. And were you a guy that just picked up an instrument? Did someone teach you? Were you a singer?
Well, the instrument picked up when I was 7 or 8 years old, the harmonica and the guitar. And the dilly bowl for my daddy, you know, daddy better being a preacher. And I started from way back then, but I wasn't professionally. Just I wanted to play the harp and wanted to sing the blues and wanted to play the blues and listen to the blues and be a part of the blues family, you know. And I got set to meet B.B. King and Fats Domino, Little Walter, Muddy Waters, and Howlin' Wolf. Yeah. Migrated to Chicago, and that's how I got to Chicago, you know.
That's amazing. Now, were you heading a band? Were you just joining bands? Were you writing your own music? What was it like back then?
I got my own band together in 1949 and 50. I had M.O. James on guitar, myself, and after that I got Freddie King, and I put a few guys together, and I had Red Fox as an MC.
Wow.
Then when I got to Chicago, I put Pine Top Perkin together before you went with Muddy Waters. Then later on, Buddy Guy came in 57. Etta Jane came in 1957. But Bo Diddley came in 1954. Jimmy Reed came in 1952. and John Lee Hooker came in 1953.
Jeez.
And out of that mold now, I am the oldest black blues singer in this category that left out of that mold. Now the next guy would be Buddy Guy, Buddy Guy, and the next rock and roll guy would be Little Richard. So I'm older than Little Richard and James Brown, Buddy Guy. They all the younger than I am.
God bless you, man. God bless you. Wow.
Now, when you're growing up in Arkansas and you moved up to Chicago, I've always heard like, there's different sounds with East Coast and West Coast. Is there kind of a different blues sound between the South and the North?
Yeah, well, it's a bit different sound because the guy tried to get a little slick because everything you hear North, most of these guys, 90% of these guys come out the South anyway because it was a migration where I migrated to Chicago, but it wasn't straight to Chicago. How I left Pine Bluff, Arkansas, I went to Memphis, Tennessee on Beale Street, myself and Rupert Thomas, B.B. King. Made enough money to go to East St. Louis, made a couple more dollars, then we went to Chicago. So most of the guys in St. Louis, Chicago, and Detroit, 90% of them guys from Mississippi, Arkansas, and Louisiana, and Alabama. That's where they're from. And they sound a little bit different because once they get that amplify themselves and have better amplifier, better guitar. They come up with a little different sound, but they all rooted from down south, man. That's where they come from.
Now, let me ask you. I'm always fascinated. We talk to a lot of musicians on the show, and I'm fascinated by the way people write and the way people record. Now, you being in the music industry for 60 years, you've seen everything change from just live music to records to taped, back to records, onto digital now. How, in the early days, how were you guys recording your stuff?
One take down. If you made a mistake, it's just a mistake. You wasn't no overdub then. We started, wasn't no overdub. You have to be either to be right or you're wrong. You go in there and you started, you make count it all two or three times. But after that, you recorded it where it's right or wrong. And one take down. Wasn't no overdub, man. You know?
That's why the music, the older recordings, you could feel a little soul in them, a little imperfection.
Oh, you could feel it, man.
I think it's better.
You have to just play from your heart and what you knew, and you have to rehearse it with in your head what you're going to say, what you're going to do, how you're going to play it, what you're going to play. And you hope that you have it right, because you make a mistake, it wasn't very much chance you had to go back correct it again, unless you start the whole song over, you know?
Right.
And if you had anything halfway right, you didn't do the song over anymore, you know? You live with the mistake, and you record it there, and you cut. That's why you hear so many different versions of the same song, you know?
Huh. When you're starting a career, when you're first coming into blues, like you have to have like a certain tone and sound. Like, is it something where you need to have like pure hardships, or can you tell like some kid goes up there and tries to sing the blues, it's like you're just making words, you're not telling a story to us?
Oh God, you can tell it, man. You can always tell what's been read and what's coming from the heart, you know. The story from the heart, man, is the true thing, you know. And everything I do, but a few things, is the truth. When I say everything I said, but a few things, I wrote this song about I wasn't going to sleep with a fat woman no more. I lied about that, those parts. That part I lied about. You know, but most of the other stuff I say is true. You know, no, you can tell always when you're coming from the heart, man. You talk about what you feel and what you experience through life, and what you enjoy, what you want to do, what you wish you could do, what you wish you had, and what you don't have, the ups and downs, the ugly, good, bad, what have you. And you can tell when it's coming from the heart, man, you know. But, you know, I've always tried to mortify as a young man. Now I'm an old man, still try to mortify to keep up with the Joneses a little bit, to mortify the thing we do, because everything is a mortification, because 25 or 30 years ago, we couldn't even interview like we're doing now.
Yeah.
The sound is good, and we sound. It's a modification. And I often tell, when I was a kid, I didn't have an inside toilet. We had to go outside to a bathroom. And it stinks. Now I got 9 bathrooms, and they smell real good. But everything we do in them, it remain the same. That haven't changed.
Well, let me ask you, Bobby. So like you said before, you're the oldest of this generation of African-American musicians who, if you look back, just the guys you named and yourself, and just the plethora of music that has, not only do we still hear the original versions, we still hear people singing them in clubs. We hear new versions of them. How does that feel to you to see, you know, this amazing music created by African Americans so respected now and prevalent, and to see how far you've come?
Well, it makes me feel good to see the music respect, but it makes me feel bad for people who disrespect the people who did it.
Mm-hmm.
See, they respect the song, but they never tell who did them, where they come from.
Right.
That's what. And then you got, see, a wall was designed for the white guy to sound like the black guys. Now you got black guys buying wall trying to sound like a white guy who's trying to sound black.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, but it's all in good taste when you hear it. You got to take your hat off to it, because if the white guys and the blues lovers, when it was white people who love the blues and keep it going, what would the blues be? Because black people as a whole is shame of their craft. It's shame of the blackness of the music, and they think it's something less than something else. That didn't come from just because they don't like it. It's because the writer, the newspaper, the TVs, everybody talks about blues being something less than something else as long as the black guy's doing it.
Right.
So now, you got everybody doing the blues, and then just tell where it's come from. Do the blues and tell where it's come from, you know?
Absolutely.
I got my hat off to a few guys like Bunny Ray and all the guys, Clapton. They always tell where that music come from, who put it out and who did it. And they always tell it, but a lot of people don't tell where it's come from. So that means it look like they created it,
right.
and they get the credit for doing it. It's all right to get the credit, but just tell where it come from.
Gotcha.
You know?
Yep.
I mean, with all the touring that you did and the writing you did, your first album, if I do the math right, came out when you're around 46 years old. Was it just a goal to like tour and do blues music, or was there something why it took a while before you did your first album yourself?
No, I wasn't that old. That was when I got recognized for the first record. I wasn't that old. I was in my 20s when I put my first record. But I didn't get nothing recognized until the Chicken Head really come in. But I had done several records before that time, you know. But that's how life be written. What it is, unless you well known, you just started to the record come. But I had cut at least 12 or 14 records before that time.
Oh, wow. Well, any of them in particular that like really stuck to your heart, where you wish that was like your first breakout album?
Well, my first big album was Chicken Head, was the biggest album. It was a gold record for me.
Yep.
And I remember that year I had the number one record. James Brown had the number two record. Bill Withers had the number three record.
Wow.
And to beat them guys out, yeah. God, you have to be raising hell to beat them guys out, you know? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But just be talking to you guys about that. You thinking I was 40-something years old when I had the first record, but I was not that old. But nevertheless, I was that old when I got recognized. Just if you think that's bad or good or whatever you want to call it, I was 83 when I won the Grammy.
Yeah. Well, you led me to my next question. You know, in the 2000, Rolling Stone, said that one of your albums was one of the best blues albums ever. And, you know, 83 years old, you know, just a couple of years ago, you win your first Grammy. That's got to feel pretty amazing to be in this business for so long and be rewarded what you should be rewarded.
I can't find words to the express my feelings. It felt like dying and going to heaven, man. I just, God, Lord, who would ever thought after all the records that I had was very good, especially for the black radio play. But I never thought I would get it. And then when it happened, it just took me kind of by surprise. I was happy. I was crying. I was smiling. I was all these things in one, man. God, I was just make me happy, you know? It's amazing, man. It's amazing. And I just thank you, God, for giving me the strength and time to do this. And I thank people who voted for me and saw fit for me to win this and thought I was the person who waited on it and do for it, you know?
I mean, you just your experience alone and the different things you've done is totally warranted. What do you do with your Grammy? Where do you keep it?
I keep it. Do you? I mean, really supporting. I got a police guard on that thing, man. I mean, I do another. Yeah, but you know what? Speaking about the Grammy, this record I have out now, I got a new record out called "Sitting on Top of the Blues." Now I'm gonna tell you something. Coming from a Grammy, don't anybody tell you that it's always hard to beat your own self out.
Yep.
Because how can you, when you get to the top, the Grammy, that's the top of the line. Where you go from there, you either got to be as good or better. So it's hard. But I think I come close to beating myself out with the Sitting on Top of the Blues, man. That's hard to do, you know.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty awesome that I love that you're still making music, still putting new stuff out there, still writing. So that leads me back to my other question. So how did you guys go into the studio for this one? How did you record this one? Are you still tracking live, or is it a different?
I'm still tracking things. I still have some things I didn't put on when I thought I should have put it down on the last record that won the Grammy. Mm-hmm. But I had some things in mind, just like I got things in mind. All this just recorded already. I got things in mind what I'm going to do on my next record. I'm always thinking in the head. I'm thinking about my next round, man. I'm not ready to give it up yet. I'm not throwing the towels in. So I think I got a few more under my belt, you know?
Oh, that's awesome to hear. You toured literally all around the world. You're one of the first blues artists to perform in China. You've been to Germany, South Africa, Spain, you name it, you've played there. Do you feel that on the international scene that your music can just translate that easily, or is there any like countries where you had to kind of work on them to kind of say, this is blues, learn about this, hear about this?
No, I think it's kind of easy for me, especially now, because people look for a Bobby Ray sound now. When I first kind of started crossing over to a wider audience, they kind of look for the thing like Muddy Waters or B.B. King, because they weren't used to a black guy in my age and time had this much rhythm. You know, my thing was so energized, got so much rhythm and so much storytelling in it. They haven't saw nothing like this since Chuck Berry. Chuck Berry had a story, but his thing more rock and rollish. But he had a story to tell. I got a story to tell. My thing is funky and blues, you know?
Yeah.
It's funk and blues. It's like folk funk. It's like a little different from Muddy Waters, a little different from B.B. King, but the story pretty much the same. We're talking about life, where I was, where I want to be, and talking about ladies and what have you. Talking about love and making love and being in love, you know?
I love it.
You know?
I love it. Now, let me ask you something. You, with this digital age we're in now, we see, you know, record sales pretty much non-existent for some bands and some, and you know, and touring is kind of back. What are your live shows like? And also, with the digital age, are you able to connect with new audiences that you never thought you would connect with? Younger audiences, audience from around the world?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because my thing is so energized and my thing is so mortified to the young people to understand where I'm coming from. Although I'm an old man, but if you listen to my music, I'm talking about the things the young people relate to today. You know,
right?
I'm just talking with you. You know, this new record you're talking about. You know, get out of here with you, and don't you come back. It ain't nothing but a rap, some rappers kind of thing, did in the blues kind of way. It's all about now. You know, I'm talking old talk, but musically it's yesterday. You know, but people can relate to it. But it's got the approach to it. Like where we going? It's modification. It's like the telephone. You know. You know?
Yeah, I mean, and even when we set this interview up a couple weeks ago, like, you know, I've been driving in the car and digging into like your back catalog of stuff and mm-hmm. getting into it. So it's pretty cool to be able to do that and obviously to be able to talk to you. Otherwise, you know, we would have never connected in a million years. It's pretty neat.
That's right. See, it's just like it's record shops. You sell records. It's pretty much don't exist anymore. But your record shop can be your bandstand. Mm-hmm. Your bandstand is your record shop. Now, if you don't work, you don't sell a record. You got a few people who selling records because, you know, if you got one of them songs like Take My Horse to the Back Door or whatever, you know.
Old Town Road, man.
That's ride to the end of the song, you know. But I still talk about the thing people can relate to. And I think we're going to reach a number that we're going to be surprised at the number we're going to reach. And that's for some people out there still want digital records and tapes and want the vinyl stuff. They wanted to autograph on the shows and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
But it do make a little bit tougher if you don't work. I work a lot of shows. I work over 200 shows a year for the last 60 years. So it make a little bit better for me, you know?
I love it. I love it.
With all that touring and do performances, do you have any rituals that you do going into a show, or are you just done it for so long you just lay back and like, all right, let's start?
Man, I've done it for so long, and God had given me the gift. I can walk into an audience in 2 seconds. I can tell what not to do. I can tell what not to do, not what to do. I can tell what not to do. Just when I look at an audience, I can tell what not to do in this audience. So that's an advantage because of the time I've been doing it, man, just experience, you know.
It makes me want to ask you, was there a certain situation where you went in there and you did something, and that was the first time you said to yourself, okay, don't do that again.
Yeah, man. I did that a few times, man. You can always tell when people don't understand where you're coming. Sometimes they don't have to be the point where it's not good. It just can't relate to it because it's new to them. You follow me?
Yeah.
If Jane Brown was on the stage, if he were living and did the ballot, they probably wouldn't go for it because they used to him doing a dance thing. If they used to buy the risk coming off a certain way, they relate to me coming off a certain way. They expect me to be, it's almost like we're doing this interview. What you say about me, what people expect me to be. So that's what people, when people see you, what you look like, if you got to come out with that and better. For what you look like, you know, you can't come off looking bad and sounding bad. If you're looking bad, you must sound good, you know. Yeah.
Let me ask you something. You recently were on Jimmy Fallon with Dan Aykroyd. Yes. What? How did that come together? And what was that like?
First of all, it was about Jane Brown and this thing he was doing, and Dan Aykroyd is 38 year friend of mine. And we bond such a relationship as a blues man, and he loved what I do, and I love what he do. And it was a bond kind of situation. He thought I would be a good matchup to come and talk about something with Jane Brown because the relationship I had with Jane Brown and the same everybody. Like I'm a little bit older than Jane Brown, so he thought I would bring something to the table, and I hope I did. He brought something to my table for sure.
That's such a cool experience.
Bobby, out of curiosity, what do you listen to when you're like on the road? Is it all blues? Do you mix up music?
I mix it up. I listen to Johnny Cash. I listen to some gospel. I listen to some deep blues, some old time blues, some John Lee Hooker. And I listen to some Prince. I listen to some Jackie Wilson. And that all kind of music. I listen to music, period, and get ideas from what I should or should not do. I listen to a lot of things, you know. Because when I came up, Louis Jordan was my folk. Oh, God, this Louis Jordan. I'm a Louis Jordan nut. I just like Louis Jordan, you know.
You kind of alluded to what I wanted to ask you. So, you know, you take 66 years or whatever year it is, and you've worked with some of the greatest to ever do it, and people. Is there an artist that you worked with somewhere along the line that people never really got their due that you think should be a household name? Is there someone that you worked with that, you know, we should go on Spotify right now and look up and dive into the music?
No problem. Junior Parker, no doubt.
Julia Parker.
Junior Parker.
Junior
Parker.
And why is that?
God, he had a song out with Big Record, a Mother-in-Law Blues. God, kill you. That had been 65 years ago. Mother-in-Law Blues. He was talking about, it was early one morning, he heard the rooster crow for day. He looked out his window and watched his woman walk away. And he said, I know you heard me call him. You look back and wave your hand. And I heard when you told your mama, said, oh, Junior Parker's a no good man. Man. The other way, she leaving with her mama, said, leave that boy. He ain't no good. You follow me? Man, how many mother-in-law did that to a man? You know, he called her mother-in-law blue, you know. Then he said, when she got with him, he said, Lord, please stop her. I ain't going to get drunk no more. Lord, please stop. I ain't gonna get drunk no more. And she left me crying right in the middle of the floor. Oh, man. Yeah.
All right. now piggybacking off of that, is there an artist today that you're really in love with? Like someone that's relatively new that you've worked with or heard or that you really think?
Yeah, I like Clinton Black. I like Clinton Black, man.
Okay.
Oh.
All right.
I like Clinton Black. Like a little Johnny Cash. Then that was another guy that I didn't get into the artist. I got into a song. My first song I fell in love with. You get the hook and I get the pole, babe. You get the hook and I get the pole. We going down to the crawdad hole. Honey, baby, my shit. I like that, man. Man, please.
Bobby,
man, I please. I love that, man.
Bobby, I got to ask you, where did the name Porcupine Meat come from?
I knew about Porcupine Meat when I was a boy, when in the country. But I wasn't talking about Porcupine Meat at all. I was talking about I was talking about a guy and so in love with a girl that I knew that she don't love me as much as I love her. I want to leave her, but every time I go to leave her, she make love to me so good, I just come back for more. You follow me?
Yeah.
Now that's porcupine meat. It's too fat to eat and too lean to throw away. I got to tell you guys this. I got to tell y'all, she got this. I came by one day. I was a true story. When I was about 18 and 19 years old, I was dating this little girl. She was that. I said to her, babe, I'm going to leave you. And I had another little chick that I was seeing. She said, you going to leave me? So this particular time, she was in there making coffee and cooking a little oatmeal. And she had a gown on. I said, I'm going to leave you. She didn't say anything. She kind of raised the gown up and said, you going to leave? I said, yeah, I'm leaving. She said, you going to leave all of this too? then you understand. Then that's why I started writing this song. It's porcupine meat. It's too fat to eat, too lean to throw away.
Well, I have just gained something in my everyday vocabulary now.
you can read it. And she said, you gonna leave this? I said, well, okay, not today. I'm leaving, but not today.
Don't worry. If I use it in conversation, I'm gonna quote you. I'm gonna go. I got it from Bobby.
Okay, babe. Yeah, I'm leaving, but not today. That's porcupine meat.
Bobby, it's so clear that you still love doing music and going around and playing for people. I got to ask, is there any way you can fathom yourself saying, you know what, I'm retiring from this?
No, I know I get to play sometime where me and the band together, but I do such a crucial thing by myself. And I got this way of playing. I think most guys can't do that. I can play by myself just as good as I can with a band. So I can do both. I can do crucial and I can do both. So when I'm too old to stand up and jump around the floor, I can get on my guitar, sit down on me a stool, and I can just sing to you, man. You know?
That's awesome.
And sing and play the blues, just me and my big feet.
Yeah. Bobby, this really has been a pleasure. I've had such a blast talking to you. You're so sharp, so with it. I don't see you stomping for the next 50 years.
You got
the new album sitting on top of the blues. Is there a tour or any shows that people should come check out coming up, or where to
see? Yeah, but I'm all. They go to my website, bobbyrush.com, and go to any Bobby Rush site, Facebook, whatever. Just find my dates. I got so many dates. I'm booked up now until like December the 16th.
That's awesome.
And then we're going to the next year. I'm so booked up and everywhere. If I start to name in one place, no name in other places, so people get mad. You didn't name my town, but I'm in everybody's town. Wherever you see a Bobby Rush, please come out to catch one of my shows. And sometimes the girls will be with me, sometimes they won't, but nevertheless, I'll be there. We might be my big feet, you know?
Bobby Rush, everybody. Go check out his music. Go check out, Grammy Award winner. Go check out his back catalog. And most of all, go check out Porcupine Meat and go see him live. Bobby, you've been an absolute pleasure. I wish you the best of luck with everything you got going on. And thank you so much.
Sitting on top of the blues, man. Love you guys. Appreciate you. And God bless.
Thanks so much. Wow. Oh. Okay. For a second, it said Bobby was calling me back. He wanted more. Dude, why am I, in my mid-30s and feel nowhere near as sharp as that guy? I can't remember anything. I can't remember being like, in 2016, on this day we interviewed whatever. Like, I remember a couple things. I don't remember dates. I don't remember people.
I drove 4 hours from Tennessee today, and I'm beat. I don't know. He's been touring since the 50s, and he's like, keep going, let's go. Half an hour? No, not enough for Bobby Rush. No.
I love talking to that guy. Not only is he a musician, he can cut a promo like a wrestler, man. Like, he can, like, I could see him, like, competing for the heavyweight title of the world, man.
Just Seth Rollins is coming out with Bobby Rush. Oh, Brock Lesnar's going to get thrown down.
He's going for his finisher. Porcupine me. Porcupine me. It's over. It's over. What a great interview.
My goal is to find a way to use porcupine meat in a sentence sometime this week. You know? And if somebody asks, I'm not going to explain. No, that's not what I said, porcupine meat.
What an interview. The one and only, I could say that for sure, Bobby Rush. Speaking of Star Wars, very excited for the next movie. I love the preview. I'm very open. I liked both new ones and Rogue One. So the preview looks pretty damn cool.
I didn't have a problem with the last one. I know a lot of people are crying on it. It felt different. It was a change of pace. I mean, Mark Hamill played a different character, basically, of Luke Skywalker, different emotions and all that.
I thought that was like a good, like, hey, we're 30 years or whatever it is after the end of the last one. Like, he's old and grumpy, and he's the last one, and he's, I don't know.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying they brought a story to it, and it was a different tone. I'm a little concerned on what they're going to try to do with Leia, kind of force her in one of those. We have extra. I mean, to kind of bring it into tone, I like when we went to see Toy Story 4 and everybody's saying, oh, they have Don Rickles' voice in there. He's going to be Mr. Potato Head in the fourth one. And it's just like, hey, what are you doing? That was like his line like that. It was something where it's like, all right, you just shoehorned in there just to get more people excited about it. I mean, but yeah, I liked Rogue One. I never saw the Han Solo movie.
I didn't see that either.
Everybody says it was just trying to force fed that in, but
stuff looks cool. The Mandalorian preview came out. That looks pretty cool. The Obi-Wan thing is going to be coming out. That looks pretty cool. I don't know, man. I'm not a hater.
I haven't seen those. It's almost hilarious how people kind of shun Disney, like, oh, you screwed up Star Wars, because it's like, oh, we only made $900 million instead of $2.2 billion like the Avengers. You know, it's like, I mean, they're trying stuff. I mean, at least on the music park side, I know everything I've heard since I get the 411 on Disney stuff that, the park is just flooded with everybody going over to the new Star Wars land. But, I'm going to see it. I'm going to go in there with an open mind. And
I agree.
Hopefully they hit it out of the park. I mean,
I think
it's a little disappointing, I'm not going into it thinking it's going to be bad.
I think we're at an age where something nostalgic and old people cannot handle, that it has to change in order to keep it alive.
Yeah.
Okay. So in order for, you're asking 70 plus year old characters to have some prominent roles and stay the same and continue movie after movie from something that was created almost 40 years ago at this point. Like, it's amazing that we're able to get three of them in a movie again. I mean, I feel like they're doing everything possible. They're getting, you know, Lando Calrissian's back in this one. And if you want this story to keep going, you cannot be selfish and not accept any change. You have to accept that, okay, in order to get young people, there's got to be movies for young people, like Star Wars was originally. Mm-hmm. I think the new characters are phenomenal. I mean, I think Rey is fantastic. I think Finn is fantastic. And I think Poe is fantastic. I think the three of them, the three young characters, are really, really good.
I could see them extending the universe, them three or two if one of them gets killed off. You killed off the Mark Hamill character. I mean, granted, he can do the whole Obi-Wan and just show up as a ghost, for lack of a better term.
I thought the end of Last Jedi was cool. I thought when he came out and was taking all the fire, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, the salt that turned red and all. I mean, that was unique. I mean, My only gripe was kind of weird. They went to like that casino world.
That was the worst. Yeah. Was it clunky? Yes. Was it bad? I don't think so, man. Yeah. I think it was pretty good. In fact, I loved the first one because it was kind of like, okay, well, we're back again. It's like, yeah. Here's a new hope for a new generation, basically. That's kind of what it was.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Carrie Fisher's dead, or, Han Solo, they killed the character. The original Chewbacca, didn't he just pass
away?
He
died.
He just passed away. The original R2-D2, the guy in the suit, passed away. I think
it'd be pretty sweet if his
C-3PO, the only one.
It'd be pretty sweet if they just buried him in the R2-D2. Like, they're like, it's a casket.
Put his urn into R2-D2, and then they just use a remote control. He still plays it so well.
you just hear the power outage sound going as he goes down. But I think we're being a little greedy at this point. I am actually looking forward almost to the day, knock on wood, where the old characters are not in the movies anymore, because then maybe people could be like, oh, okay, I can accept that this is Rey's story or Kylo Ren's story, whatever it is, and we're no longer worried about like something that happened 40 years ago.
What it boils down to is, if you do a movie exactly like the old movies, everybody complains. If you do something totally different than the original movies, everybody complains. All you got to do is sit back and say, I'm watching a movie, let me try to enjoy it and move forward. But let's also always remember, there are no black mermaids, and since Spider-Man's no longer in the MCU, the world has ended.
Yep. I will tell you, I saw both of the Star Wars movies twice, because I remember I saw them with Alex, and then my brother went out, and I would see it with him for the first time. And we both thoroughly enjoyed them while we were watching them. That's all I can tell you. They were fun to watch in the theaters. They were not terrible. Was there some scenes and some clunkiness and some characters that were whatever? Guys, I hate to tell you, go back to the original Star Wars. There's some clunky things going on in there, too. It's not like, I don't know.
One of the best characters they had, they killed off by accidentally hitting his jetpack and making him fall down to the ground. You think that would fly nowadays?
Yeah. Right.
There you go.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't know. People are just too picky. They hate everything. We're going to get to a point where every movie's on IMDb or whatever, or Rotten Tomatoes, is going to be 50%.
Yeah. I think the only thing left, if they keep on complaining, is Disney has to buy Star Trek, combine them two, and then every fanboy on the planet is just going to wet their pants.
That's like, I'm already ready for it. I don't know if you saw the previews for The Irishman.
I've seen some.
Oh, my God. The preview, looks chills. Chills on my neck watching that. I actually went out and bought the book just to – because I finished the book I was reading. I'm like, this would be a cool book to read like before the movie. Pesci, De Niro, and freaking Pacino in one movie with Scorsese directing. What everybody has asked for – or wanted forever. Pesci, I can't even tell you the last movie Pesci was in. And then I feel like every movie De Niro is in, he's just playing goofy grandpa. Like,
that's the weird thing. Like, it's all fun that he changed his pace, but he picked some crappy freaking comedies to go into.
I feel like for him, I have no idea, but the mindset must be, I don't have to go into character, like, study. I don't have to dive as deep into the – and it's just easy money. It has to be what it is with those movies. Like, you look at what he can do. He's arguably the greatest actor. I mean, whatever. You want to put him top five, whatever. That's like an amazing crowd. Top five actors ever. So to see him doing that stuff is like, ugh. Like, it was funny once at Meet the Parents. You're like, wow, that was a really funny role for him. And then he was like, oh, I'm Mr. Fokker. I'm going to go with this for 12 movies straight or whatever the hell he's doing.
He did didn't he do like one of them Adam Sandler movies too?
He did Bad Dirty Grandpa, all this crap. So – that movie, I mean, James Caan is in it. Sebastian Maniscalco is in it. And a good friend of mine in the comedy world, did I tell you this story? I think I did, but I'll tell anybody anyway. He was doing a set at Jeff Paul. His name is Jeffrey Paul, very funny comic. Was doing a set at Broadway Comedy Club.
Mm-hmm.
And a day, like in the morning, he's getting calls from another friend of his, Kevin, a comic. And he's like, dude, blah, 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 blah. Whatever agency has been trying to get in touch with you, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, yeah, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, he's thinking he's kind of being pranked, you know, like they're kind of messing around with him. So it turns out that agency is Martin Scorsese's production company's agency. And they loved his demeanor and his look and his accent. He's got a very, like, Staten Island, he's kind of like a Jewish-looking guy. So they really liked him. Sure enough, he goes in for an audition, blah, 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 gets a role in The Irishman, which is
insane.
So gets the role, gets speaking lines, and apparently did scenes with freaking Pacino. Yeah.
I'm just imagining, know all the open mic comedians that we knew. Can you imagine if they grabbed somebody? You're like, what would be like the worst? Doug Max is the Irishman.
So
I keep telling him.
So
I'm not from Ireland.
So here is a guaranteed movie that people will complain about. I will put it out there right now, and I guarantee it'll be very entertaining. This could be Scorsese, Pacino, De Niro, and Pesci's last hurrah. All of them could be gone tomorrow.
Everybody will be like, there's no Casino.
It's no Goodfellas. Yeah.
Yeah.
First off, what is Goodfellas? Like, to me, it's top three, if not top two movies of all time. And I mean, I guarantee it's going to be good and entertaining and people are going to hate it.
No doubt. I got his Wikipedia page up, Pesci. So in 1998, he did Lethal Weapon 4. Then the next thing he's listed as was a cameo in a movie called The Good Shepherd. Then in 2010, he played Charlie Bontempo in Love Ranch.
Yep.
Then in 2015, he was the voice of a mosquito in A Warrior's Tale. And then in 2019, The Irishman.
It sounds like you're just playing an improv game. Like, name Pesci's, name Joe Pesci's last Adam four roles. Go.
He cameoed in.
Well, bro, I think it's time to get out of here. We've talked a lot here tonight. We talked a lot about Christmas. We had an amazing guest tonight, Bobby Rush. What do you got to promote? Anything?
I guess I'll promote a friend of ours, KP Burke. He's just celebrated his 1 year of doing the American Loser podcast. He's growing a lot of steam, has a lot of our friends go on the show, such as Jack Byrne and Joe Fernandez.
Myself, really, this weekend, I will be on.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
He told me if I'm ever back up to call him and get on there. But
I'll give people more details next week on that.
Yeah. But him and his dad go in depth on quote unquote losers of American history. They've done, I think, about 30 shows right now, and they're really informative, really entertaining. As they say, it's NPR with F-bombs. Check it out. It's called the American Loser Podcast.
Great podcast. I'm really excited to do it. I'll tell you guys about who I'm doing. It was actually my suggestion on who to do, so I'm pretty pumped about it. Actually, spending the week kind of reading up on certain things on the person I'm doing. So great podcast. Go check them out. Good friend of ours. And I want to promote a friend of the show. Since we got a great musician on today, I figured I'd promote a band, and that is Tooth Grinder. Tooth Grinder. We had a great podcast with them years ago, and they just put out another new album, and they have a song called I Am. And I thought the song was really cool. They really evolved their sound. Also, like, my brother still works with them to help promote their stuff. They're doing pretty cool things, man. I think you guys should check out the sound. It's called I Am. And I think it's a song that could get them a lot of radio play or to be recognized. I think it's a pretty damn cool song. So go check out Tooth Grinder. Guys, also go check out Bobby Rush. What a fantastic guest. Guys,
our second Bobby Rush, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's weird. Yeah. We had Bob Rush, who was Doyle McPoyle on It's Always Sunny. Wow.
Sunny,
this is a first for us. A second guest with the same name. That is that goes down in lore, in trivia, in trivia questions. But I really enjoyed myself tonight, guys. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Go rate us on iTunes. That really helps. Go share the podcast. That helps the most. And life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, boy.
Little girl, you sure can cook. Little girl, you got me. When you cook that chicken, say me to hell. I should be working, but I'm home in bed. Thinking about you, dreaming about you. Love that girl. Chicken here.